All right, so today we're going deep on a Supreme Court case. It's NLRB v. Gisselpack & Co. And, like, this thing is huge in labor law. Still matters today.
Definitely a landmark case.
We've got, well, everything, opinions, analyses, you name it.
Yeah, and it's not just history. Gissel is about how unions get recognized, even now, and it all boils down to those little authorization cards, you know, those things workers sign.
Right, right. So for folks who aren't labor law experts, can you set the stage? What was the deal back then in the 60s with all this?
Well, back in the 60s, a lot of companies, they were really pushing back against unions hard.
Really? What were they doing?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. We're talking like serious tactics to stop employees from organizing.
Like what? Give me an example.
Threats, like straight up threatening people, interrogations, even firing people who supported the union. Like it was a whole thing.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the big conflict was about those authorization cards, you know, the ones where a worker signs saying they want a union to represent them. Some companies just flat out refused to recognize unions, even if most of the workers signed cards.
So they were ignoring what their employees wanted.
Basically, yeah. Trying to rig the system against the unions. So the Supreme Court had to step in. They had to decide if the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, could actually force a company to bargain just based on those cards, especially when the employer was acting shady.
So what did they decide?
Well, in Gisselpack, the court said yes. They made this whole system for when you can skip a formal election and go straight to bargaining.
Interesting. So it was like a shortcut in certain situations?
Right. The court basically said, if the employer is messing up the process that badly, we're not going to play along with their game.
Makes sense. So how does that system actually work?
Well, they laid out a three-tier system.
Yeah.
And it's all about how bad the employer's behavior was.
A three-tier system. Okay, so walk me through that.
Think of it like a scale. Like, how messed up was the employer?
Okay, I'm visualizing a scale.
All right, so the worst stuff. That's category one. The most egregious. Think like mass firings or even violence threats that are super blatant.
So in those situations, they automatically go straight to bargaining.
Exactly. Bam. No more messing around. Then there's category two. This is where it gets interesting. These violations aren't as bad, but they're still serious. Stuff that might have scared workers away from the union.
Okay, so subtler, but still impactful.
Exactly. Here, the NLRB can issue a bargaining order, but the employer gets to argue back. They can say, hold on, it wasn't that bad.
So there's a legal back and forth.
Yep. And then lastly, you've got category three, minor violations, stuff that probably didn't really change things for the union.
The small potatoes.
Right. The court said for these, no bargaining order needed.
Interesting. So they really tried to draw some lines in the sand.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. Gisselpack is still super relevant today. However, there's debate about whether it's still fair.
Really? In what way?
Well, some people argue it gives the NLRB way too much power. They say forcing a company to bargain just based on cards, especially old ones, that's undemocratic. Do those cards really show what workers want now? That's their argument.
So it's a question of whether it's still truly representing the workers' wishes.
Interesting.
Right.
On the other hand, unions say Gissel is crucial. Especially nowadays, employers are coming up with new creative ways to, you know, discourage unions.
So they're saying it's even more important now to protect workers' rights.
Exactly. It's a real tug of war, this whole thing.
Wow. Okay, so we've got this system for when cards can replace an election. But Gissel also dealt with something else, right? Employer speech?
Oh, absolutely. That's a key piece of this whole puzzle. The case didn't say employers couldn't talk about unions, but it drew a line.
A line between what?
Predictions and threats.
Right. Okay, hold on. What's the difference in this context?
So an employer can say something like, hey, if there's a strike, you could lose your job. That's a prediction. It's just laying out what might happen.
So it's about consequences, not intimidation.
Right. But they can't say, if the union wins, I'm shutting down the whole plant. That's a threat. It's meant to scare people.
Ah, okay. So it's about the intent and the tone.
Yeah.
But that line seems pretty blurry to me.
Yeah, and it's still a huge source of legal fights today.
Yeah.
Especially with all these captive audience meetings and stuff.
Right, where they gather everyone together and lay out the anti-union arguments.
Exactly. It's a whole other layer of this Gissel thing.
So we've got this framework for understanding Gissel, but it sounds like it's not always clear-cut how to apply it.
Absolutely. There's a lot of nuance here, and it's playing out in real-world cases all the time.
And those real-world cases, those are what we're going to get into next.
Yep. We'll look at how Gissel is being used, challenged, all of it.
All right, well, after the break, we'll dig into those modern cases and see how Gissel is shaping labor law today.
So we were talking about how Gissel packing basically set the rules for when those authorization cards are enough to skip an election and go straight to bargaining with the union.
Right, and it made that three-tiered system to figure out, like, how bad the employer was behaving.
Exactly. And it's wild how relevant that framework still is. But I'm guessing it's gotten trickier with, you know, all the new types of jobs and tech and everything.
Oh, totally. So how has Gissel held up in more recent cases? Any interesting ones that come to mind?
Definitely. There was this case, CEMEX Construction Materials Pacific, LLC, just last year, 2023. It kind of shook things up.
Okay, CEMEX, what happened there?
Well, the NLRB, they basically said if an employer does anything wrong during a card campaign.
Anything?
Yeah, even small stuff. They have to bargain with the union, no more election.
Whoa, seriously. That's a big change from how Gissel originally laid it out.
Yeah, they pretty much got rid of the second and third categories we talked about.
So no more sliding scale.
It's yeah.
Just like any violation equals automatic bargaining.
Basically, yeah. Which obviously caused a lot of controversy.
I can imagine. So even if what the employer did was minor or maybe even unintentional, they're still stuck.
That's what the board decided in CEMEX. And people argued it was undemocratic, you know, to make an employer bargain based on cards that could be old. Maybe they don't reflect what workers want now.
So it's like, is it really protecting workers' rights or is it actually overriding their current wishes?
Right. It becomes a tough question. Like, how do you balance the need to stop employers from being coercive while also making sure things are fair for them, too?
Makes you wonder if Gissel's even the right tool anymore, you know?
Yeah, and it shows how differently the NLRB can interpret things over time, depending on the political climate and all that.
Okay, so lots to unpack there.
Yeah.
But shifting gears a bit, let's talk more about what Gissel said about employers talking about unions, because they didn't totally shut that down.
Right. They can still communicate with employees about it, but Gissel made this important distinction
between
predictions and threats.
Right, right. We touched on that before the break. But can you remind me, what's the difference?
So, like, an employer can say, look, if you strike, you might lose your jobs. That's a prediction. Just saying what could happen. It's allowed.
Okay, so it's informational, not trying to scare anyone.
Exactly. But they cross a line if they say, if the union wins, I'm closing this whole place down.
Ah, okay. Because that's a direct threat meant to influence how people vote.
Right. It's about the intent. And distinguishing between those two things, it's still causing a lot of legal battles. Especially now with all the new ways employers communicate.
I was just thinking that. Like, how does this whole predictions versus threats thing apply to, say, social media or company emails?
Yeah, that's the big question. When does something online become an illegal threat versus just free speech?
It seems way harder to draw that line in the digital world.
It is, and courts are having to figure it out more and more. Like, what if an employer likes an anti-union post or shares an article that makes unions look bad?
It gets complicated fast.
It does. And it goes to show, even though Gissel is from way before the internet, it's still shaping how we think about this stuff.
Fascinating. And I'm sure we'll see even more of that as technology keeps changing how we work. But wow, this has been super insightful. Thanks for breaking all this down.
No problem.
It's amazing how this one case, Gissel packing, has had such a huge impact on labor law. And it's still evolving.
Definitely.
So before we wrap up, I'm curious to hear your final thoughts. What are the key takeaways you think our listeners should remember from all this?
Well, I think a big takeaway from Gissel, and we've talked about this, is how important collective action is. You know, those authorization cards, they might just seem like pieces of paper, but when workers actually use them together, they become powerful.
It's like a reminder that workers do have power. Even if the system feels stacked against them sometimes, they can make their voices heard.
Exactly. And thinking about the legal side of things, Gissel shows how crucial it is to keep good records. Every single interaction, every little thing said during a union drive, that could be important evidence later on.
So it's not just about, like, the big obvious stuff. Even small details, an email, a comment someone made, it could all matter down the line.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a message to employers, too. Like, be careful. If you try to mess with union support through threats or anything like that, it can really backfire. Not only could it be illegal, but you might end up having to bargain with a union anyway, even without an election.
So it's like Gissel created this system that's trying to be fair to both sides, workers and employers, but it also sets some pretty clear limits on what companies can do.
Right. And it shows how important the NLRB is. They're the ones making sure the playing field is level, protecting workers so they can organize without being afraid.
Thinking bigger picture for a second,
yeah.
I feel like GISL comes down to power dynamics in the workplace. It's about making sure workers have a real say in their own working conditions.
Absolutely. And that power dynamic, it's always changing as work changes. But GISL gives us a framework, a way to navigate all that complexity, even as the specific problems change.
It's wild to think. This case, it's over 50 years old. But it's still relevant as we deal with things like remote work and the gig economy, all these new ways of working.
Totally. And it makes you wonder, how will GISL keep evolving as work keeps changing? Will this framework still work in a future that's, like, super digital?
That's a great question, and one we'll definitely keep exploring here on The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into NLRB v. GISL Pack & Co. Hopefully you've got a better grasp on this landmark case now. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and stay curious.